A good way to start. Welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 220 for August 1st, 2010. Peter writes us here with co-host extraordinaire Eric Jackson.
Thank you. Hello.
Special return guest Ian Crouch. Hey, Ian.
Hi there.
Great to have you back on Stutter Talk.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
I dare say you've already, you're only 26 years old and you've had your 15 minutes of fame. We're going to get into it soon, but Ian recently wrote an article on stuttering for Salon.com, and no less than 4 to 5 people contacted me who are not in the stuttering world to tell me about it, friends and family. So it was well read.
Okay.
So, couple...
That's a weird thing to say. He's already had his 15 minutes of fame.
I don't think I said it like that. I meant like he...
I think you did, Peter.
The way I meant it to sound was, it's a good start for a burgeoning career, was how I meant it to sound.
There you go.
And Ian Crouch is a contributor to the Book Bench blog at NewYorker.com and lives in New York City. Couple announcements. Stutter Talk was just featured on National Public Radio. So if you want to hear that story, go to stuttertalk.com, click on the link in the left sidebar, and you can hear Peter, that's me, and Eric talk about stuttering. We have a new voicemail number. What do you think of that, Eric? You're giving me strange looks as you munch your vegetables.
I didn't get a chance. I'm sorry if I'm showing you all my food right now. To eat before. I'm really excited about our new voicemail.
Yeah.
Line. It's been down for a long time.
Yeah.
And now people can call in again and leave messages.
Yes.
Mail.
There's a new voicemail number, 206-666-4350. You'll hear a short message, then leave, well, say whatever you want to say. We may include it in an upcoming Stutter Talk. Now, as we've said before, we cannot return phone calls, but we do listen to them. So please keep them coming in. Couple more announcements. We are behind in reading and responding to some emails. We've been very busy with the summer, with jobs, with conference
shows.
With
Peter's baby, Sammy.
With being a full-time dad over the summer, but we do read them and we will get back to people as soon as we can. And lastly, the Stuttering Brain has been putting up some good posts recently. So Dr. Tom Vitage over there has recently put up some posts about the Kill Your Stutter advertisements that you can find on the web. So I'm not going to really talk about it now, but to follow what Tom and others are doing, go to the Stuttering Brain and check that out. Okay, Ian, we're so happy to have you on board. You recently wrote for Salon.com an article titled The Shame of the Adult Stutterer, which we will link to from Stutter Talk, and it was published July 5th, 2010, and it's a wonderful article.
Yeah, we met you about a year ago, right, Ian?
Yeah.
And we had you on the show. I think you came on twice, right?
Once or twice. Just the one time, yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, we actually tried to get you back on the show, invite you back on. And you talk a little bit about this in your piece.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you want to come on again after that first time?
I think in a way, it felt as though I was still more sort of uncomfortable about speaking with other stutterers and speaking about my own speech. I think in a lot of ways I still am. And it was easier to sort of to kind of stay away than it was to re-engage, I think. I think it brought up for me a lot of emotions and a lot of thoughts that I hadn't really worked through, and that in a lot of ways I'm still working through as I speak. So I think it was I felt in a way that I had sort of stuck one foot in to the water and then wanted to kind of maybe it felt a little cold, and I wanted to step back.
I am so glad you said that, Because after reading your piece, that's exactly what I thought. I thought that you were putting your toe in the water of the self-help world, and it felt like you didn't like it. Like, it felt like you were basically saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the self-help world talking about stuttering seems to help many, but it didn't really help you. Do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that that would be a good way to put it. Throughout all of this, I don't really feel like I've formulated fixed thoughts. I feel like this was kind of the first step, and I wanted, you know, to be as clear as possible in what I wrote, that you know, in a lot of ways, I was the least qualified person I felt to write about stuttering, because even though I stutter, I don't feel like I know what it means, you know, to other people, and I don't really know, even in a lot of ways, how it works. And so, and I think I tried to emphasize that a little bit, that even though it's something I think about every day, it's not an area of my life that I'm an expert on at all. And so, I wouldn't necessarily say that the self-help world won't always be like something that I'm interested in exploring, and I certainly wanted to emphasize the value that I've observed, even in my limited experience with other people, that it's had in their lives. But at the point that I was working on this, it did feel as though it wasn't something I was necessarily ready to engage with.
I think most people do. I mean, we always talk about this, how we don't really know most stutterers, you know? So you say you might not be qualified, but you're probably writing for the majority of... I think you're writing from a perspective that's held by a lot of people out there who stutter. Probably more than we think, you know? You said something, like, really great in the piece about how when you went to your first support group meeting, which was at Brooklyn College, right? Like, you walked into a sterile room in it. I have always had the fear, especially running a group, you know, that for a lot of people walking into that environment and, like, meeting other people who stutter for the first time, talking about stuttering openly for the first time. Like, a lot of these places where we hold our group meetings are not, like, comfortable, cozy places. Like, it would be ideal if we went to a bar, or, you know, if we held it in someone's living room or something, you know?
I think in a lot of ways, though, that it was... that this pace in a lot of ways was less that this pace only kind of magnified what you know, what I was already kind of feeling inside, and that if it had been anywhere else, then the exact same experience might have happened as well. That, you know, that it would have felt uncomfortable in another way. It wouldn't have been sterile like a classroom, but it may have been sort of dark like a bar, or this like a, you know what I mean? It in some ways that's just a factor of trying to sort of set the scene as well. Yeah. So, you know,
I guess it was the word sterile that did it.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, because I've thought that like many times before, you know.
And I have to say that I really appreciate having you back on Stutter Talk, because I think you're expressing in your article ideas and feelings that probably many people have, but the people who don't really embrace self-help, don't tend to write the articles, mm-hmm. don't tend to come on podcasts. So I feel that you're joining us here today as somebody who, as you said, sort of dipped your toe in the water a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I really value that because we're getting a different perspective. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I want to throw out a few things you brought up in your piece that sure. I think many of us can relate to. Mm-hmm. One is you wrote about this idea that you always felt you would outgrow your stuttering. How do you think that affected you?
Well, I would say that primarily the moment in my life when I felt like I was starting to be a grown up and that I still stuttered was a very traumatic experience in my life, because I did have this idea that this was a childhood disorder, that it was going to be a part of my life when I was young and that I was going to overcome it. And in the way that you imagine about all kinds of things about your life that don't necessarily come true, that didn't come true either. And it was, you know, it's a factor of wanting to see, imagining perhaps that when you grow up and you're older, that everything in life will be exactly the way that you imagine it. And then coming to terms with the fact that stuttering was going to just always be a part of my life was, I guess I was unprepared for it.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that I had great support from my family and from a speech therapist who never made any sort of promises or guarantees. There was nothing like that, but that I just expected that it wouldn't be a part of my adult life.
I want to give our listeners a taste of how you write, because you've written, some of the passages are just very well written. I mean, I don't expect you to agree with me out loud, but one of the things you wrote, the hour or two a week I spent playing Trivial Pursuit or reading aloud with my therapist was so unlike the rest of my life. Speaking was so comfortable and easy that it came to seem useless and false. Now, as a stutterer and as a therapist, that really says a lot to me.
Mm-hmm.
So to digest that, you're basically saying speaking easily in the therapist's room was actually a negative experience for you in some way. Could like explain that to us?
Certainly, in the moment that I was able to speak fluently and in an environment that felt safe and comfortable, in that moment, it was a great relief in my life. That was a wonderful outlet and experience. But as I started to get older, and I felt as though I was trying so hard in my everyday life to sort of speak in the way that I spoke in the therapist's office, and to feel the same sort of ease and confidence that I felt there, but was unable to achieve that, then started to sort of seep back, I think, into the therapy experience, and to feel like that this was pretend life, and that real life had no real correspondence. And so then the moments in therapy lost their sort of comfortable feeling and became almost more frustrating because it seemed to sort of work there.
Yeah, like, and I don't want to speak for you, but
no, please.
Kind of like you're like part of a lie or something.
That's what, yeah, I mean, probably a little bit of, yeah, I mean, that there's always the concern that this article that I wrote, that in a year or in 2 years or in 10 years or even right now, when I hear the words, that you do tend to cringe almost because what you wrote then, you have to face it. And, yeah. And it becomes a moment of kind of facing up with where your mind was at that moment. And so even now, I've been back to read it and reading also the responses have made me sort of look back on it as well. And it's a humbling experience and also a very scary experience.
You had tons of responses.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, that was exciting because...
I'm sorry. Please
no, go ahead.
Some of them were kind of off the wall. I don't think any of it, off the wall in the sense of it, I got the sense they were honest. It's like, this is what people really think. I didn't think that there was, nobody was messing around with you. Like, some people wrote, like, if I may just say, like, one of the responses you got, which I think was sincere, was somebody who wrote under the name Fly Girls wrote, you have to say that with a straight face.
Yeah, absolutely.
She wrote, "I suspect the only person around you who genuinely cares about your stuttering is you."
Mm-hmm.
And I think she meant that constructively, like you're worrying about it too much.
Right, right.
What do you think when you hear that?
There is a, in sort of writing comments on the web, there is this sort of unfiltered, everyone loses this you know, the social niceties that happen when you speak to a person on the phone or face-to-face, and the idea of that anyone wrote this at all becomes kind of a secondary idea to your immediate reaction. But I think that you're probably right, that is meant as a constructive idea that you know, that I'm worrying about it too much, and that it's not the biggest deal in the world, and that other people face other issues, and those are all responses that are completely reasonable and I expected, and I agree with. But I think it also sounds kind of terrifying, this idea that you're alone with your stuttering, that you're the only one who thinks or cares about it is you. Might not be necessarily true. I think we've all had experiences with family and friends who have been supportive, constructive, unconstructive, that, you know, that it does involve others, I think.
Let's take a break right now, and then we'll come back with Ian Crouch.
Hi, folks, I'm Mel Tillis. Nobody knows better than I do how stuttering affects your life, but help is close at hand. If you, your child, or someone you know has a stuttering problem, reach for the phone and call the Stuttering Foundation of America for information. The toll-free number is 1-800-992-9392. 1-800-992-9392.
Hi, this is Michael Sugarman, co-founder of the National Stuttering Association. I want you to tune in and listen to these guys. They're pioneers in the field, and we're just getting the word out. So thank you, guys, and keep on talking.
Welcome back to Stutter Talk, everybody. I'm Eric Jackson, here with Peter Reitz's special guest, Ian Crouch. It's great to have you back on Stutter Talk, Ian.
Thanks. It's great to be here with you guys on, you know, it's not so hot anymore here in New York. We've actually had a nice, it was only 85 degrees today, so.
And I got a new air conditioner, yeah. So it's not... It is off now, but it was on all day, so it's not even that hot in this room. It's usually a sweatbox in here, so you should feel lucky, Ian.
I do.
We were talking about some of the responses that you got to your article, Ian, and you had mentioned before that your parents, I guess read some of the responses. Read your piece, obviously. What were your parents' reaction to your piece?
I think that they were happy that I got published and supportive and excited, but I think they also, I think it's, you know, it's written in the first person. It's a very sort of personal account. I'm upfront in the article, and I think in some ways that may have made them slightly, and I don't want to speak for them, of course, but I think it may have made them slightly uncomfortable to think that the, especially when you read some of the comments that, that kind of address me and say, I think you should do this, or I think you should do that, or this is wrong, or this is right. I think it may have made them feel a little bit uncomfortable. And, you know, in our relationship, stuttering has always been one of the issues of sort of discomfort at moments in my childhood, frustrations on kind of all sides. And I think having a story written in the first person about my stuttering might have been a little more comfortable than if I had an article about a novel or a book or a, I guess that's the exact same thing, but, you know, other subjects that weren't about our lives.
And there is so much tied up in our stuttering and mm-hmm. our
Absolutely.
Growing up and our parents. Are you... The reaction that your parents had, you know, mm-hmm. And you kind of putting this tough topic out there and getting all these responses, was that a positive thing for your, well, for you, for your relationship with your parents?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's been a central concern over the last few weeks. You know, I think we've spoken about it a little bit. I think it's hard with something like this to strike the right balance between writing about an issue in your life that is kind of vitally important, but that you haven't really worked out yet, and trying not to make it sound like a there's the issue of it being filed under a rubric called disability. That's the way that Salon filed it. The shame of the adult stutter is a headline that was selected. That's, you know, it's a very strong way of saying what I said in my piece. And then those are the things that in a lot of ways that stand out. And so to indicate that it's a shameful disability, I mean, if you look at it that way, is it's going to invite, I think, a response that might say, well, it's not a shameful disability, or it's not a disability, or it's not the thing that it's not the hardest thing that anyone would have to face.
And it could have just as easily have been titled "The Complexities of
Absolutely.
The Adult Stutterer," which I think would have been a better title,
sure.
but might have gotten less hits.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's an understandable aspect of it. That
I just want to remind everyone: this is episode 220 of Stutter Talk, here with special guest Ian Crouch, who just wrote the wonderful article "The Shame of the Adult Stutterer," which can be found at salon.com. Ian, I got the sense from this piece that you're well aware that many people who stutter are helped by meeting other people who stutter.
Mm-hmm.
And I also got the sense that you've been helped. Well, you seem to... I don't want to speak for you, but you seem to think you've been helped less. Why do you think you've been helped less by hanging out with other stutterers?
It's that poorly colored room, isn't it? Wait for it.
So I hope, first of all, that's fair.
Sure.
What I just said, like,
yeah.
And I know you're saying that you're grappling with this, but mm-hmm. why do you think you've been helped less than other people you've met in the stuttering self-help world?
Sure. Well, first thing is that there are a lot more people in the stuttering self-help world that I haven't met, and mm-hmm. that, you know, I I admit to having fairly limited experience. That being said, I think that for me, stuttering is both still something that I identify as being sort of central to my life, and also something that I try not to think too much about. And it's a bit of a paradox, because I do spend a lot of time thinking about it, and maybe not always in the most constructive ways. If I were to spend that time in a more constructive way, that might be a better way of living. But it's a good question, and I don't think I've really worked it out yet. Why it's maybe to look at it another way. Why do other people find it so helpful, do you think?
Well, boy, I'm just going to speak off the cuff here.
Please, yeah.
But it seems to me in this piece you really present a person yourself who's grappling with all these things. It seems like you're well in the middle of the journey and not at the beginning, mm-hmm. and not at the end. Because at one part you're saying you don't want stuttering to be the center of your life. Mm-hmm. And then you write an article for Salon.com and people... You know, I had an ex-girlfriend I haven't seen in years contact me immediately, like mm-hmm. the same day it came up, and it said, you got to read this article. And then she wrote me back and said, oh, you're in it. that's not bragging. It's just funny.
Yeah.
You know, and my brother-in-law wrote me, and a few other people did too. So it's out there. So
sure.
I definitely think that you are grappling with this. I also want to bring this up too, and I'm trying to find the quote, but you basically wrote that you don't have any negative feelings about stuttering. And I guess I want to ask you, is that really true? Like, do you really feel that you... I'm trying to find the quote here.
I'm not sure that I would say that. I think I certainly have a lot of negative feelings about my own stutter. And I think that's kind of... central, but...
I'm sorry, you wrote, I rarely suffered from the emotional side effects of stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to completely believe you, but I do also have to say, is that really true? Like, you know, you're 26 years old. If there's no emotional side effects, or if the emotional side effects are limited,
mm-hmm.
then what is it that's so hard about stuttering?
I think at that instance, in the piece, I just wanted to emphasize that on a day-to-day level, my childhood was kind of was unblemished, and was you know, I didn't want in that instance to have it sound as though, and heading back to sort of trying to maintain a balance between having this be an issue that was central and challenging, but not the hardest hardship that anyone's ever faced. And I think that's what I was trying to emphasize at that point. I would say that there have been emotional, that, you know, the way that I think about myself and my life has been significantly shaped by stuttering. But just, I didn't want it to come across as the defining aspect of my childhood. In a lot of ways, it became more of a defining aspect of my late adolescence, early 20s. In a way, I think, as a factor of the fact that I am starting now to come to terms with the fact that it is going to most likely continue to be a part of my life. In fact,
yeah.
I can say 100%.
It will.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I would just like to back up a second here.
Sure.
And it's a self-help support style podcast, so I would like to keep talking about what might turn people off about self-help, or like why it helps some people and it doesn't help other people as much. I wouldn't say that, and I'm going to talk a little bit about me here. I wouldn't say that I initially benefited from the self-help world. Like, I had treatment, mm-hmm. you know, what I refer to as a good treatment. And then I was a more or less tricked into thinking I was going to be fluent, and I found this ease with talking and all that, and that kept me going for a little bit. And at the same time, I was doing other things in therapy to be more comfortable with stuttering, you know. But I never like sought out a support group, and when I would go to practice groups at the American Institute for Stuttering, for instance, I never like really found them that helpful. And what I kind of found helpful was meeting other people who stutter in like a casual sense. You know, when I met Peter, and then when I met a bunch of other people, like on my own terms, kind of. Mm-hmm. I guess where I'm going with this is that, is there something about, and you kind of reference this in your piece, is there something about like the cliche of a person is struggling, he finds support group, and then he gets better, like rah-rah. Is there something about that that maybe made self-help support a little off-putting to you, or...
Yeah, I would say that I entered into it with I would say that I held those preconceptions that I was suspicious of a certain kind of popular sense of self-help, but I would say that I didn't find in the time and in the experiences that I've had meeting other stutterers to find that to really be true. I don't find that there's some kind of self-help group think or this idea that I just I've actually found self-help in terms of stuttering and in terms of the people who I've met to actually be very persuasive and fascinating. For whatever reason, I haven't found that to be compelling enough to continue seeking out others.
I just want to jump in for a
sure.
second. In that sense, is it something about it being contrived? There's this thing out there, support, self-help, you know, mm-hmm. and it's supposed to be this thing that you go to and you feel empowered or something. And something about like not coming to realizations or not finding stuff out on your own terms. Did that make sense?
Yeah, sure. No, I think that makes sense as well. I remember after the first meeting that I went to, feeling this real excitement and enthusiasm that for the first time I'd been able to speak about some of my experiences with stuttering, and I had met other stutterers, and that everyone was really nice and normal and not at all terrifying in this way that I had sort of contrived in my own head. And yet I also found just I'd like to be able to play like devil's advocate here and to try to explain why the self-help movement is not right for me, but I quite honestly don't have those answers worked out yet. I'm not at all I would say that despite the tone at points in my piece, I don't feel particularly antagonistic toward self-help, and I'm more than anything, I recognize the benefits that so many have experienced, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was just bringing that up because, like, I totally got that at points, you know, where it from the piece, it sounded like either there's something wrong or there might be stuff that's not really appealing about support and self-help, and I may have been, you know,
sure,
conjecturing or something, but that was why I wanted to go there.
I would emphasize that, like, me trying to write this, though, in a lot of ways feels like my own attempt to sort of work through the stuff, and I think a lot of that was inspired by meeting other people, and that, you know, maybe the way I do it is by writing, and the way that other people are able to do it is another way. It just ends up being... And I'm, you know, I'm still getting used to the fact that this becomes something that a lot of people read.
Yeah.
That it goes from being something that you work on and you work with an editor and you work very hard on in terms of how it sounds and the style and the prose, and at the end it's out there for everyone, you know, to look at. And it's still a scary thing. But I do think that I wouldn't have written this if I hadn't met a lot of the people who I met.
I think what's important about this piece, and frankly, what's important about what we do here at Stutter Talk, is that you're writing in the middle of dealing with something.
Yeah.
And so much of what I, this is my opinion, so much of what we get in the stuttering world is the finished product, is I've been in self-help, this is what I've gotten from it. Mm-hmm. And it's really great to, if you don't mind me saying, to see a work in progress.
Right.
Like, you're clearly grappling with this stuff, and not in a negative way, but some of the things you write in the piece could be seen as contradictory. But that's okay. I mean, I think you'd be the first to sort of say that.
Absolutely.
Or agree to that. Let me ask you this. In the piece, you said something I thought was really interesting, mainly because I've always felt the exact opposite.
Okay.
And I don't even know if I felt the exact opposite, but when I read it, I knew it, where you basically said stuttering is your great shame in private and in public. And of course, I felt like that for many, many years. But then you wrote, if a cure were to come along, something else would replace the stuttering. Kind of like there's always going to be something else for you to be ashamed of or bothered by. And I always felt, man, if the stuttering would just go away, everything would be fine.
Right.
I could deal with everything else in my life. And looking back, I have to admit, I still can't see anything else taking the place of stuttering. Hmm. So, like, what do you think, where does that view come from for you? That something else as bad, you know, the quotes are up in the air, as stuttering would take its place?
I think in that case, I would say, two things. That one thing is that I'm sensitive to the fact that outwardly normal, and again, now we're going to use air quotes, outwardly normal people carry around great psychological and emotional weight that unless you get to really know them, you never find out about. And so, whereas stuttering is a very sort of outward experience. It's very out there. When you meet a person, it's often the first thing that they might notice about you. That for a lot of people, there is something similar that might not be as noticeable. And so I wanted to emphasize that. And I do suspect that if it were not stuttering, it would be some other thing that is kind of, you know, a little bit underneath, you know, maybe the way I look or the way that I talk in a way that doesn't have to do with stuttering. I think that I might find another challenge that would cause me the similar amount of anxiety. That being said, stuttering has been a significant challenge, and it might not find an equal challenger.
Yeah. I completely identify with what you say, and I'm really glad that you brought this point of the piece up, because I think one of the signs that I had that I was making progress in self-help was when I began to realize and believe that it's... I always used to think as a kid, you know, if this thing went away, like, my life would be perfect, you know? Mm-hmm. And then when I started to realize that, a lot of this thing is in how I react to it, you know, and mm-hmm. how I, as a person, deal with it. Certainly, stuttering is a great challenge, you know, but at that point when I started to realize that, yes, if my stuttering was away, just because of who I am, my personality, you know, something would probably take its place. You know, not to the same degree necessarily, because, but I think something would, you know, like, it's a big part of stuttering is how we react to a problem, you know, a breakdown, a whatever, like how our makeup reacts to it. And something else would come up, I have to think. And stuff has started coming up in my life where my major problems are not stuttering anymore.
Interesting.
It's
yeah.
other stuff, which is great. You know, I'm rambling here, but I just want to mention, you know, I said about a couple years ago, probably, that my fear of public speaking related to stuttering, I was just always consumed with the fear of stuttering. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't want to stutter in front of people when I was speaking. And then when I started thinking, oh, like, I'm going to stutter on purpose in front of people. Who cares if I stutter? Mm-hmm. It's great. You know, then my main concerns were, I better have something good to say while I'm speaking up in front of this group, you know?
I wish everyone could see the smile on Eric's face right now. He's about to burst.
I'm just saying.
No, it's...
Sure, we take another break. Yeah, I just brought that to a grinding halt.
Well, that is your new nickname, Grinding Halt Jackson. I have just one last thing to ask you, Ian.
Sure.
Is there anything from this article, from writing the article, that you learned about yourself or your stuttering? One thing that sticks out?
I would say that I've learned how much more I do have still to learn about stuttering, but then also just about you know, the way that I do sort of look at my life on a day-to-day basis. I mean, just having to sort of talk about what I wrote, and in a lot of ways this is the first time. It's about a month later. Yeah, it's about a month. This is more or less the first time that I've really spoken at length about the article. And It's kind of forced me to think a little bit about, I think, what you mentioned, Peter, this idea that it's a middle part of a journey, or an early middle part even, of what is probably a long way to go.
Yeah. Well, I hope you write a follow-up piece. I hope Salon prints it, and if they don't, Stutter Talk is going to step up and say, we will print part two. I only say they might not because, you know, I don't know how much folks want to follow these stories or not. It's no offense to you, but...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a speech-related question.
Sure. Definitely, yeah.
When you're out, or when you're here, and Peter and I both stutter,
yeah,
you know, and you're doing a show about an article you wrote on stuttering, mm-hmm. and it's on a show called Stutter Talk, or whatever. Do you let yourself stutter openly a little more?
This environment definitely does feel more comfortable, and I can recall two or three moments during this very recording where I was stuttering, and in my mind I thought, oh, that's okay, you know, because of all the things that you mentioned, that about who I'm talking to and about what the show is called and what the article is, in a way that it reminded me of what you just said, that when you stop worrying if you're going to stutter, you start realizing that you have to know what you're going to say.
So we're going to close out this show, but we're going to record another very short episode with our special guest, Ian Crouch, and we'll probably post it midweek, Wednesday or Thursday. So tune in for that. Ian, thanks for joining us today at Stutter Talk.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. This has been a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Stutter Talk at stuttertalk.com, 206-666-4350. Now I have to remember a whole new number. 206-666-4350. Thank you for listening.